And it's World AIDS Day. At the height of the epidemic in the 1980s and 90s, many AIDS activists believed the Catholic Church turned its back on people dying. At this protest in 1989, gay New Yorkers were furious that Archbishop John O'Connor refused to acknowledge that condoms could help slow down the epidemic. But at the same time, many devout Catholics and clergy reached out to sick young men who were shunned by the church institution. Michael O'Loughlin tells these stories in his book, Hidden Mercy. He spoke with Peter O'Dowd last December.
Right at the beginning of the book, you write, "I am gay and I am Catholic." What was it like to even put those words on paper?
It wasn't easy. Even though I'm comfortably gay and comfortably Catholic, I still have a hard time kind of talking about that. And then to set out to write an entire book with a premise sort of covering those topics was a bit daunting, but ultimately I'm glad that I did that.
And many people will wonder how you can be comfortably gay and comfortably Catholic. And I hope that's something we can kind of come to understand a little bit better through this conversation. Tell me about that struggle to reconcile those two parts of your identity and how it led to the book and to also to the Catholic priests and the nuns who really put everything out on the line during the AIDS crisis in the 1980s and 90s.
For the past decade or so, I've been reporting on Catholicism and sort of its role in the public square. And when I started off reporting, a lot of that conversation was about same-sex marriage because you had a lot of Catholic leaders who were fighting against same-sex marriage laws in various states around the country. And I was tasked with covering that for different publications where I wrote. And it was somewhat of a personal journey, too, because though I wasn't publicly out, I am gay and I was Catholic covering this seemingly hostile development in terms of church leaders and same-sex marriage. And I just felt like this was all new, that I was learning about this clash for the first time. And I didn't really know where to turn. I didn't have people to talk to ask, how did you make it work being a gay Catholic? And it was over dinner one evening with a priest friend who's a bit older than me, and he had worked in HIV and AIDS ministry back in the 90s, and he was telling me about some of his experiences. And I had always known that there was this history of the Vatican cracking down on gay Catholics in the 1980s, but I hadn't considered that that was all happening against the backdrop of HIV and AIDS. And my friend was telling me that there was a lot there and encouraged me to explore that because there was this time where there was this very intense clash between the gay community and the Catholic Church.
Let's dig into some of those stories. You profile a nun named Sister Carol. She was from a small town in Illinois. She went to New York City to learn how to care for people who were dying with AIDS. Tell us more about Sister Carol and what motivated her to do that.
Sister Carol Baltashevitz was a Catholic nun who had worked in emergency rooms and ICUs in the Midwest, and she was kind of burnt out as she approached 40. And she decided to do something a bit easier, so she moved down to Belleville, a small city in southern Illinois, and began home care nursing. And pretty quickly, she encountered her first patient who had pretty advanced AIDS. And she grew really frustrated because she didn't know how to help. So she and another sister in her community, Mary Ellen Rombach, they approached their superior and said, we need to move where HIV and AIDS is already a major crisis because it's going to become one here someday. And they packed their bags and moved to New York City for 6 months. She was immersing herself in the gay community, working at Catholic hospitals that had HIV and AIDS wards, volunteering on AIDS hotlines. And it was a lot for her because you had a small town nun really learning about gay life in New York in the 1980s. But she did that because she wanted to be able to move back home and serve people who were back in Belleville.
You profile at great length a priest named Father Bill McNichols who ministered to men who were dying of AIDS. And I want to play this tape. It's from 1987 at a protest. He's speaking with ABC News about why gay Catholics were so angry at church leaders.
I think it is the cruelest thing in the world to ask a human being never to be touched, never to be held, never to be treated like everyone else gets treated simply because they're born one way or another. They ask that of no other person.
How radical were people like Sister Carol and Father Bill? How far outside of the orthodoxy?
Sister Carol and Father Bill, especially in that tape, were quite radical in challenging the institutional church, which was really cracking down on the gay rights movement in the 1980s as HIV and AIDS was becoming a public health crisis. And Father Bill did so at great personal risk. He was a member of a religious order that had a lot of control over his public image. And he was encountering young gay men dying from AIDS and said, I need to take this risk to be a voice for them because they don't have a voice in the way that I do. And his ministry affected countless numbers of people because of his courage in talking about the things he believed in.
I noticed a significant difference, but you tell me if I'm right about this, between the institution of the Catholic Church and what the leaders were saying about the AIDS epidemic or about gay members in the Catholic community and what was actually happening at the local parish. Is that right?
It's true. It's a good observation. And something I try to do in the book is show that the institutional church was pretty hostile to the gay rights movement. At the same time, there are many, many people like Father Bill and Sister Carol who were doing the right things, who were setting up the clinics, visiting the hospital wards, fighting for rights in the public square. But they were doing so against an institutional bigotry that unfortunately still persists to this day.
There were quite a few instances of local parishes actually reaching out to the gay community. For instance, you tell the story of one church in Chicago that had an interfaith AIDS service that was attended by the winner of the International Mr. Leather contest. It kind of sounds like a joke, but actually it was serious and had some pretty profound effects. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there was a community of mostly men into leather who would hold a convention each year in Chicago. And in the 80s and 90s, they really pivoted to being advocates for HIV and AIDS awareness and fighting for gay civil rights. And there was this idea that they should get involved with the AIDS interfaith vigil walk, that they had something to contribute and they weren't going to sort of hide, even though they weren't fully welcome or embraced in the gay community. So there's this scene in the late 80s where many of these leather men are gathered inside this Catholic church in Chicago, seated right up front. They're not willing to hide who they are. And they ultimately help lead this candlelight vigil through Boys Town in Chicago. And you had these different communities that seemed ripe for a clash, but ultimately found a way to make it work.
Oh, take us back to that time, the 80s and the 90s, and just, you know, why you think these people were able to connect. It was such a terrifying, uncertain time. What was driving these people?
It was literally a fight for their lives. I think it's hard for us to imagine what HIV and AIDS did to a generation of gay men. That fight for survival when everything else seems hopeless because you're being ignored or even stigmatized by institutions that should be protecting you, there was this commonality that we have to do something to work together to raise awareness.
Michael, what happened when priests started getting sick and dying of AIDS? What kind of ripples did that set off inside the church?
It became clear even by the late 1980s that HIV and AIDS was having a pretty significant impact on the Catholic priesthood in the United States, which is a problem, of course, because Catholic priests are called to celibacy. Gay men officially are barred from being Catholic priests, even though there are many gay priests. And the reaction was interesting. On an institutional level, there was a lot of denial and even outright cover-up that priests were dying from AIDS. But again, on the more pastoral on the ground level, which is where I reported, there was a lot of examples of care and compassion from either bishops or religious superiors who saw in their friends and colleagues dying these terrible deaths, this need to be more compassionate in the public square. So in a way, you kind of got the best and the worst of the church's response in this phenomenon of priests dying from AIDS.
But how did people, maybe lay people within the church, perceive that? Because there was already a stigma around AIDS. It must have been even greater when, someone who was supposed to be celibate got sick.
There was, and I think that's why there was a lot of cover-up. But I write in the book about an example of a priest in Chicago who died from AIDS-related complications and insisted that at his funeral mass that the priest preaching the homily acknowledged how he died. And it was his attempt to sort of help lessen the stigma that if he could come out publicly with his own struggles with HIV and AIDS, it might encourage others to do so as well.
We talked a little bit at the beginning about your own struggle to reconcile your faith with your sexuality. How did the people who you met in your book try to answer that same question? Because, you know, I understand Father Bill was also gay.
Yeah, Father Bill was gay. I talked to gay priests. I talked to LGBT lay Catholics. And I asked them all this question, how do you stay in this institution that seems so unwelcoming? And there were a variety of answers. Some people say they ignore official church teaching and don't even listen to what the Vatican or what bishops say. Others say that they struggle with it, but they find a welcoming parish and make that work. They go to a a church where there's a priest who welcomes all sorts of families. But ultimately, I think the thread through all the answers was you have to decide you want to be part of your faith community, whatever it is, and then be willing to do the hard work to make those spaces welcoming and not shrink back when you encounter resistance.
Michael O'Loughlin's new book is Hidden Mercy, AIDS, Catholics, and the Untold Stories of Compassion in the Face of Fear. Thank you very much for speaking with us about it. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter.
Our interview from last December. And we have a few seconds, so we want to leave you with Fleetwood Mac's Christine McVie, who's died at 79 and was a steady presence in one of the most successful groups of all time. Mick Fleetwood wrote that part of his heart has flown away, that McVie left us earthbound folks to listen with bated breath to the sounds of that songbird.
Love.